Hi, Juliet the Rabbi here, recording in New York City as usual. Maybe one day I'll be recording from somewhere else, but for now, this is where I am. Always. Shabbat Shalom. Yeah, it's almost Shabbat. And today I'm going to talk about a lavish Ukrainian wedding, an owl, and Vayakhel. This week is a Torah portion about too many gifts, if that's possible. It's about turning people away in their generosity. It's about saying you're bringing beyond what is needed for this project. In this case, materials needed to build the mobile sanctuary for God to dwell among the people, among the Israelites, in their long trek through the desert. I want to talk about this Jewish wedding of an interfaith couple I recently officiated. I wasn't really sure where I was going with it and how it was connected to this week's Parsha, so I had to just start. So here I am, starting. It happened a couple of weeks ago, but it's still very present in my mind. I say Jewish wedding because, though the bride was Jewish and the groom of Muslim descent, they wanted a purely Jewish ceremony, so that's what I gave them. The now husband is a non-practicing Muslim from one of the former Soviet republics, and the now wife comes from a long line of famous, according to her mother, rabbis from Ukraine. I believe her. I totally believe her. I didn't recognize the names she told me, but I believed her, of course. I mean, you know, somebody tells you they're famous, whatever, you know. Most of her family died in the Holocaust or in Soviet work camps. So it was important to them, to the wife, to the bride and her mother, that they have a rabbi. Both sides of the family seem affectionate and caring towards one another, and their common language is Russian. It was almost impossible for them to find a rabbi willing to officiate such a wedding, as you might imagine. You know, rabbis. The guy is not converted. It's on Shabbat. Ugh, all kinds of problems. The Chabad rabbi that they'd actually turned to, and I would have told them not to do that, had even questioned the validity of the bride's Jewish identity. Like, that's horrifying. She's like, what do you mean? I have to prove it to you. Like, we're Jewish. And I'm thinking, just look at her last name. Like, isn't that enough for you? I'm not going to say it because privacy, you know. But so they were relieved to have found me. And so I go out way out to Brooklyn and far out near almost at Coney Island. And as I approach the venue, I'm looking up and I'm like, yeah, this is the place. And this woman comes up to me and grabs my arm. Come, Rabbi, come, she says in this thick Russian accent, if you couldn't tell, emphasizing Rabbi, Rabbi. It was so funny. I did not laugh. No, not funny that way. Just kind of like the way Mike Birbiglia says, if you've ever seen him, the comedian, stand-up comedian, you got to watch his specials on. You know, he's like, no, it's not funny now, but this is going to be funny later. Like, this is the joke later. Anyway, like this guy comes up to him. He's like, well, you're not funny. He goes to the doctor. I'm sorry, I got to tell this little story. He goes to the doctor. This is Mike Birbiglia, and he says, and the doctor asks him, what do you do for a living? And he says, I'm a comedian. And the doctor looks at him and he says, well, you're not funny. And he goes, no, what you don't understand is that you're the joke later. Sorry, I love that joke. I think it's really funny. Anyway, I had no idea who this woman was. Back to my story. But quickly, I decided that she was a friend and that I would indeed come with her. And she immediately started giving me the long history of her family. But I had to interrupt because I'm going like, who is this person? I don't know who she is. And then, so I gently as possible, I interrupt her and I say, sorry, but who are you? And she says, I'm the bride's mother. And I say, ah, and then it's time for an enthusiastic hug. And I say, how did you know I was the rabbi? And she says, I smell. She's gesturing with her hand around her crinkled nose as if there were a scent wafting in the air. I mean, that was funny. I did laugh. And then I saw what a stupid question I'd asked. Of course she knew I was the rabbi. We entered the banquet hall and it was like I was entering into an alternate universe. I immediately felt like a fish out of water. People began arriving, women in long, sparkly, multi-$1,000 sequined gowns and spiked heels, small fur shawls across their shoulders, or long fur coats. And me, how was I dressed? I was dressed in chic, wide-legged trousers from Old Navy and a cute little black jacket that I've owned for like, oh, at least 20 years, maybe 30, I don't know, and creamy Oxford Doc Martens. And boy, was I glad I had packed my heels. Yes, I put them in my backpack. And I also was thinking, like, these people didn't get the memo that wearing fur in the U.S. is now considered cruelty to animals. Well, putting that aside. So I'm figuring out the logistics in the venue, and there's all this hustle and bustle all around me. The chuppah, the wedding canopy, is lying on the marble floor, waiting to be picked up. It's like set up so that the people who are going to hold it know exactly where to stand. And it's got these thick, I mean, the groom had told me, oh yeah, I ordered chuppah poles. And he said, they're birch. And so I was like, oh, beautiful. But I didn't expect, they were trees. They were thick branches, Anyway, they're white and they're blending into the marble floors. And I'm thinking like, oh my God, somebody's going to trip over it. No one did. I thanked God for that. And servers are rushing around. They're rushing by carrying elaborate trays of food to the tables. They have salads, all these different salads of beets and fresh white cheese and mushrooms that nobody knew what they were. Caviar. I mean, they looked like seaweed, but like I asked the way, and yes, it was mushroom. God knows what kind. And there was caviar and there were huge swans carved from watermelons and giant blueberries that the woman that I sat next to told me came from, Chernobyl, she says, from Chernobyl. See how big these are? And I'm like, I thought she was being serious and she was joking. There was vodka and whiskey and imported sodas and sparkling water. There was enough food to feed 40 people at each table, and each table seated only 10. I swear to God, we barely made a dent in the food on our table. It was, yeah. Oh, I forgot to mention the smoked fish and anyway. So, I gathered the couple and their immediate family for a private little pre-ceremony ritual in a small room off to the side, and we surrounded the couple. They were a nervous wreck. Everything was fucked up. They said, oh, they fucked up. They fucked up this. They fucked up. I got them the room. I found them a place. Everything was fine. And anyway, I had them face each other, and first I led them through a little breathing exercise because everybody was very nervous, and a nigun, a wordless melody, to help the couple transition from their frenetic energy. And I told a little story about why we unveil the bride, from the Jacob story of Rachel and Leah, where he's given the wrong bride. I think I've explained this before. He wants Rachel. The father gives him Leah. He doesn't know because she's hidden under a veil. doesn't figure it out until the next day. I guess his other senses weren't working. I don't know. And so the groom covered, I had him cover the bride with her veil, and everyone showered blessings upon them. And then they were finally calm and ready. And that went really well. And then as we began the more public wedding ceremony, I pointed out how poignant this moment was. You are two people of supposedly such different cultures and religions in a time of such strife and pain in the Jewish and Muslim world. Not to conflate Palestinians with Muslims. As we know, there are Palestinian Christians as well. You don't have to be Muslim to be Palestinian. But the general idea, like that was there. And here they were coming together in love and fully supported by their family and community. And I pointed out the ripple effects that such a thing can have on the world. Even the fact that they don't think that such a union is a big deal in itself. That's a big deal. Just that fact. Yet, they're not so different from each other after all. They have the same values. They share a language. And they speak, they both came here as immigrants. And then afterwards I was reflecting, I was like, was I actually a fish out of water in their supposedly alternate universe? This older cousin from the bride's side of the family, she took me under her wing. She introduced me to the foods on the table. She made sure I saved room in my stomach for more. There's coming more. There's more coming. Don't eat too much. And she made me laugh. And she made me dance with her the whole time. She took me into... So the way she introduces herself to me when we're talking about the food, and she says, I can't eat too much because I am getting fat. I need to lose weight. But the more I try to lose weight, I gain weight. And it all comes here. And she grabs her breasts. And I'm like, oh, well, that's a good place for it to go. And she's like, no, not good. I can't wear my bra anymore. I can't fit my bra. And then at some point she says to me, she's like, my stockings fell down. And so I'm like, well, I think you should go to the bathroom. And so she says, do you know where bathroom is? So I said, yeah. She says, take me. And I realized she needs me to take her because she is so drunk. She needs to hold on to my arm as we walk. And so I take her to the bathroom. And it was like being with an old world. I don't know. It was so old world. It reminded me of my mother and the comfort with her body. It was so funny. So I show her the bathroom. They're separate bathrooms, not stalls, in one big bathroom. And I'm going to close the door behind me. And she grabs my hand. And she pulls me into the bathroom. She says, no, come with me. Come inside with me. And then she immediately starts hacking up her dress and pulling up her stockings. And then she says, look at this shit dress. It's $2,400. For this dress, it will never come apart. It's like all these sequins, but they're even fancier than sequins. I don't know. It was crazy. Some friend lent it to her for the wedding. This is how people were dressed. Anyway, when we left the bathroom, I mean, she had me laughing hysterically the whole night. I mean, what? Talk about gifts, right? Because I was at first so uncomfortable. They wanted me to stay and eat. And I wanted the experience, but I was like, oh my God, am I going to be on? Can I speak to these people at my table? Everybody was so far away from each other. The music was so loud. And here she was. She sat down next to me. And in fact, she showed me my seat. She grabbed me and she showed me my seat. It had my name on it and Rabbi, you know. So going back to the table, we're about to enter the dance floor. We have to cross the dance floor to get back to our table. And there's like a lull in the music at the moment. There's in transition. And so she stops me. We don't go walking. She stops me. She's holding my arm. And she goes, we wait for music. And I said, okay, we wait for the music. And then the music starts again. And she makes me do this. She grabs my other hand with her other hand. and she makes me do this tango walk across the floor. I mean, it was hilarious. She was hilarious. So yes, gifts, gifts, gifts. Every moment there was a chance for a toast for the couple and l'chaim and another shot. We drank, had to drink another shot. I had sips. I didn't have shots. But, you know, that's why she was so drunk. And maybe she has a drinking problem. Anyway. In addition to those gifts, the mother of the bride was grateful, I felt, for a female rabbi that she could link arms with and tell her story to, along with her stories of woe. And I was thinking, like, is this too many gifts? Should some of the enthusiasm for giving or abundance in this instance be redirected? Should we turn some of the gifts away? Did the bride, for instance, need two dresses, one for the ceremony and the other one for dancing? Did they need an MC and three live singers? Enough food for an army and four photographers? Maybe a better balance is what's called for. Maybe that's the message of the Parsha this week. Yeah, it's definitely a value system. I mean, where do we choose to put our money and limited resources, which in this case, I know, are limited? I think of our human need to give and how abundance makes us feel comfortable, like all is well in the world. I think of our need for celebration, especially in these times. I think of the now somewhat famous Palestinian student, Hisham Awartani, who was shot in Vermont a few months ago. You should listen to Notes from America, the podcast, February 19th episode. They interview him. He's amazing. It's wonderful. And I wonder about how he's more relatable because his mother is, you know, because he's a native English speaker as well as Palestinian. I think of the GoFundMe movement to help him with medical costs. And I think of how, with sadness, that funding medical costs in the U.S. in this manner has become commonplace and unquestioned in a country with so much wealth and yet so much poverty. I think of Hisham Awartani's discomfort with all the attention and money he's receiving, knowing meanwhile that if he were home in the West Bank, he'd be just one more anonymous Palestinian being carried around on a stretcher, if he lived. I think of the famous Central Park Zoo owl, Flaco, having survived a year in the wilds of Central Park, now dead, receiving lavish attention from individuals and the media. I was in the park last week and noticed a photograph of him sitting on a, taped to a tree and taped to a, and to a fence, another one to a fence, and then I come upon this incredible tribute to this owl. I mean, flowers being laid down and poems and enlarged photograph. It was crazy, crazy. And then the media is there with big, I mean, people are coming to like pray and cry. And the media is there. There's like, yeah, they've come with their huge, I don't know, doing interviews and whatever. I know we're living in painful, soul-sucking times. And I know that this one little owl gave so much hope to people in these times. It was like a little ray of hope, something to distract people from what's going on. And I understand it's difficult to look at photos of starving and dead Palestinian children. Really hard. Much easier to look at an owl and focus our attention on that. It's also hard to come to terms with the fact that the U.S. government, Biden, President Biden specifically, while saying what Israel is doing in Gaza is over the top, is not only not stopping it from happening, but actually responsible for funding it. It's hard to be reminded that the war in Ukraine is still happening. But I wonder, can we find a balance in where we put our money and our attention? Can we measure more carefully where we give our attention? I leave you with this question. And I ask you to make a blessing. Can you make the blessing? And can you please put it in the comment section for all of us? If you would make a blessing or a wish or a hope, it's the same thing for the world, for these times, based on the stories, the stories that I just told. It would really be helpful to me to get the word out, to increase my listenership. And also, yeah, so leave a comment in the comments box for the podcast. And also, please visit my website, realrabbinyc.com. You can leave a comment there on the blog page. And yeah, and see all the other stuff that I offer. Okay, so good Shabbos. Shabbat Shalom. We need it. We need peace. We do. Shalom. Okay, till next time. Bye.